Hey everybody, Matt Michaels and Rob Bossolier here on the Vegas Bad Boys of Podcasting. Currently, Sin City Steve, I believe, is somewhere stuck in the Bellagio fountains. I was so excited after Wembley Stadium that he went all in. And
Lord.
Now and is stuck until probably we get them all out. So
figure. That's what you did there.
Yeah. And then DJ Impact is on another fucking cruise.
Yeah, he is. I joked about this, but the freaking guy is on a cruise.
And watching wrestling pay-per-views while on the cruise. So,
which makes you wonder why even bother. Just stay home.
Well, you could figure if he could just lay on the bed and the wife, he could just kind of like rock the bed gently while he's watching wrestling, it'd be just the same fucking thing and way less expensive.
He just spent $5,000 to go on a Viking cruise when he could have been watching an amazing weekend. Sin City Steve has an encyclopedic brain. I need to take notes, and I took notes because I did not expect Bash in Berlin to be good, and it was great. So I actually stopped playing my video game. My head went this way to where my other screen is, and I paid attention to the matches.
Well, and Sin City, let you in a little secret. He doesn't have a photographic brain. He literally has notes on the other screen that he looks at because there's just too much wrestling to.
Yeah.
It's just crazy. But with that being said, let's just go to. We'll kind of use a little bit of the usual here. Let's go for two spoons. Give me a little of what you thought was sweet this weekend.
You know, we were talking about this before, and I said, let's stop talking about it off air. The match between Dominic Mysterio, Liv Morgan versus Damian Priest and Rhea Ripley was freaking incredible. Liv Morgan and Dominic Mysterio lost, but the quality of the match they put on and watching her take a bump and then go right back to the assault, doing high knee strikes when she was taking some really nasty bumps, and Rhea Ripley having spots with Dominic Mysterio where she was able to get him up into a riptide and not look like she was struggling to lift him, is a testament to him being able to sell the move, because the move has to be sold on both ends, right, from the guy receiving it to the person giving it. Really, really, really polished. And for them to be able to fight off the other members of a current Judgment Day to deliver just one of the greatest matches of the night. And there wasn't even a title on the line.
No. You know, when the interference started happening and then Rhea was on the outside, and all of a sudden Liv goes and does a dive through the ropes. And they even said, like, she almost overshot her. Like, that's how much adrenaline and excitement after already wrestling the, you know, 12 minutes or so at that point that Liv had behind her. It was just, yeah, perfect storytelling to continue this build. I'm assuming we see Finn versus Priest, and maybe we see the demon come back.
Yes.
Phenomenal to build that, especially if you have a pay-per-view called Bad Blood and it's Halloween time. That's a perfect time to bring that out and really kind of set up the idea of the bad blood between Damian and Finn, because that seems to be, you know, that was the interference you were waiting for after you saw Carlito and JD. When is he going to, you know, appear and make that strike? So, and perfectly placed match too, right in the middle.
Now, you mentioned Carlito. He still feels like the odd man out. He still seems to be too comic relief. I don't know if he ever decides to break off or go one way or the other. The other thing we never got, which I'm assuming we're going to get on Monday Night Raw, was there was no follow-up with the Odyssey Jones angle with Xavier Woods. Yeah. I'm not sure if we're going to get that heel turn that I'm expecting we're going to see. Maybe Monday night will.
Possibly. And, you know, that's the brilliance, too, of doing only five matches on the pay-per-view, right? You do the PLE with five matches. It's shorter in time. It's more focused on those particular five stories they've been telling for this one. And then you go back to Raw, and now you have time to tell some of these other stories. Listen, we didn't even see the Bloodline on this show.
Right, that was the thing. But what amazed me, and now I have, because you're a week apart, comparing this program to All In, part of the allure of this one was the crowd was so into it for every match. I don't care for the current commentators. I'm not a big, you know, Michaels fan. Here's what I'll say about that. With the crowd being that into it, it makes the show that much more exciting. It was like watching Rocky IV, where they're in Russia and the crowd starts to turn and support Rocky over Ivan Drago. And you're right. Going, wow, now there is intensity building for each match. I'm as excited as the audience is. I did not get that in All In. At All In, there was, wow, that was a really good match. And these guys wrestled their hearts out.
You know what? And unfortunately, you're actually seeing that across the boards with the AEW shows right now.
They're not badly wrestled, but no. The audience is not invested.
No. And there is listen, with a smaller number, and not Wembley, obviously, but just a regular show, a smaller number of people in, you have a smaller base that is invested in every match because this is what they love. What you're seeing here in Germany is not only at this pay-per-view, but Friday on SmackDown. The same thing when Bayley came out, the fan, she came out, chased Tiffany out, and the fans were still singing, "Hey Bayley, I want to marry you."
Right. Would you be my girl?
Would you be my girl? Yeah, that's
awesome. Yeah. And that's part of it is because we haven't had this opportunity to see this person live. So for these people, if you're an American audience, you take it for granted that eventually they'll flip around to your city.
Right. And I think now speaking of American NXT, you know, what you haven't seen yet, Rob, is the reaction of the Colorado crowd, which was just as fucking insane. You know, I think it's the idea of when a fan base are engaged in the stories, and you take a scale back, and when you don't have 7-8 matches on a card, it's easier to keep that energy going when you time out the matches so that it feels like everything's flowing, right?
Right.
That's very big. I think that some of the problems that the WWE had in the past had to do with the fact that the fans were tired of seeing the same matchups, but also the stories weren't that investing. And Steve, you know, is someone who always said the continuity was bad. There was no reason to really care about what was going on because of the fact that stories would end quickly, things would just go away, and you knew who was essentially going to win a match.
Right. This is what AEW has done. We'll get to that in the what the fuck. I want to get to one other. Well, actually, there's another what the fuck. But you mentioned it with the Randy Orton match. There was a camaraderie and sportsmanship with the Liv Morgan match, and the Sunset Powerbomb spot was incredible. The CM Punk match where he grabs his bracelet before he hits the last bell with that last pad. Oh my God. The whole crowd that's what we wanted. He didn't hit it. And then he grabs the bracelet,
puts it on. Then hits it. And he has the Rocky moment too. Like you were talking about the Rocky IV moment where once he hit it, then his big smile and his arm up in the air. It's like he just won a championship.
Right. And I've got that feeling from that. There was a cathartic moment where I felt that he felt he accomplished something. Drew McIntyre is his larger than life guy that we are chipping away at. He is a great heel. He's a great villain. He plays the role well. Predictable matches. Bam Bam's talking about Steve talking about predictable matches. Sometimes you want that in the sense of, with, you know, the feeling with Cody Rhodes, if he didn't win that second time around, my head would have exploded. But, well,
and also, are the predictable matches, or are we talking about WWE or AEW? Because if it's right. AEW, predictable matches are totally fine in Steve's book.
Well, here's the problem, which is going into All Elite Wrestling's All In. If you tell me Bryan Danielson's putting his career on the line, I went, what? Why would you tell me that? Why would you tell me that? I know you're not going to lose now. Nothing that happens in that match matters to me now, because the ending was told already. You buried the lead. He's not going to lose. You're not going to send the guy back to his kid.
Well, in the follow-up, you know, the show afterwards, this past Wednesday, they did the same thing, but in reverse. And that is, I will retire once I lose this belt.
Which is stupid. It's stupid. And you're not even retiring. You're not going to be a full-time wrestler. What is this?
Right.
This is like, I don't want to. This is like a horrible edging. It's like, no, not yet. Not yet. No. Stop it. What you're telling us is, like anything, you'll show up once every 3 months. You're not going to cut movies. No one's booking you for anything. You're going to show up when you need a paycheck. And you'll show up and somebody will say, I'm the best in the world. Then you're going to hear the American Dragon music. That's fine. I don't need you to set terms on yourself. Just show up when the fuck you want to show up. If you want to play John Cena and show up for All In and show up for All Out and show up for, you know, the casino battle royale, whatever.
Right.
That's fine. I don't need you to set that as a stipulation for how long you're going to hold a title reign for, because it's idiotic then. It's idiotic. You're telling me that everything is a career match now. Stupid.
Some of what you haven't seen yet, and have to mention in stuff that stood out. TNA Emergence pay-per-view, the 1 hour match between Nick and Josh Alexander was phenomenal.
Hold on, we've got a request here. The guy wants to hear it, like Donald Trump. And you know, it's such a shame, it's so sad what happened to AEW. They used to be good. And now what they're doing is they tell you the match in advance. Okay. They tell you the match. They tell me, oh, Bryan Danielson, I'm putting my career on the line. I want to be home. I'm going to be with my kids. I'm going to get neck surgery. So I know you're not going to lose. It's really stupid. Poor investment on Tony Khan's part. If I would have done that, I would have invested billions of dollars and I would have expected a return on my investment. I would have expected a return on my investment and I would have said, excuse me, you're fired. Okay. You told everybody the ending. You're fired. Get him out of here. I have no need. Go take him back to W. You know what? Let him be the NXT champion. Let's see if they want the GOAT to be the NXT champion, okay? Maybe Brie Bella. Take Brie Bella with you, okay? She's not doing anything. She could be his valet, and they could parade the little kids around, and he could wrestle and defend the belt once a year on NXT, you know, Bash at the Beach, whatever they want to call it, you know? Cody's back over there. So, you know, we got all the rights to those names because Cody got the names. And I said, Cody, you know what? You own the names. You got the right to the names. If you want to call it Bash at the Beach NXT, okay, you got War Games. Call it War Games. Call it Bash at the Beach. It's Cody Rhodes' property.
Well, and we do have a Halloween Havoc coming up here.
Halloween. So. And by the way, it's going to be wonderful production. People have already told me, Donald, what you're taking over, it's going to be huge. We're going to make Halloween Havoc great again.
Welcome. You know, and the surprise of TNA was the fact that at the end of Nick Namath's match, out walks JBL.
And yes, I did see that.
Ring. Yeah, yeah, just gets in the ring and whispers something in his ear. And both men look at each other smile and nod, acknowledge it, and now there is something. You know, it's like all of a sudden things are like the lines are blurred.
DNA for me needs to be a bigger presence than it is. And unfortunately for TNA, if they do a 3,000 seat arena, they'll get 2,000 to 2,500. I don't know what more they need to do. They're such a good product.
Well, it's all television deal. Access is not something that is readily available. So they do have that struggle, but they own the stations, so they're kind of in a situation of a catch-22. Now, with Endeavor coming and doing the internet rights, you know, the streaming rights and stuff, that could help, and that might change things up, and they possibly could get some kind of deal at some point. Especially if they continue to catch fire and are working with TKO like that. We saw Wentz win the X Division championship in the mm-hmm. sixth way, and then shows up on NXT with the championship, of course, you know.
And he fights Wes Lee.
And he beats Wes Lee. Trey Miguel is there, is in the – prevents Wes Lee from using a steel chair, basically, kind of comes out of the crowd. And Wentz wins, which is, again, something you didn't see AEW doing, right? When you're working with
the company, would dance around it.
They wouldn't let people get wins from the other company. And that's something that I had a problem with back then. So
they did one where they had Moose go to wrestle for the belt. And he said, okay, the Good Brothers are barred. And I went, well, yeah, but you already know that the Young Bucks are going to be there. And the Young Bucks are going to – and it was – they didn't have any crowd participation like they would do on an AEW match. It was four people wrestling with no audience at Daly's Place as a TNA fight. And Moose gets his ass kicked by the fucking Young Bucks. And I went, you saw that 9 miles away.
Yeah. After the win, backstage, we get a quick segment where Trey and Wentz basically say, well, hey, we're here. We're together. We got new tag team champions in Axiom and what's his face? Mm-hmm. I can't for the life of remember his name, but he's wonderful.
And the white guy.
Yeah, the white guy, the guy who is not all the other guys from overseas, but Wentz and Trey are getting or at least have challenged them for a title shot next week. So
Nathan Frazier,
there we go. I always fucking forget his name. But, you know, this is what we're seeing going on. Again, TNA pay-per-view had Joe Hendry remixing the theme song with the Hardy Boys in it. Phenomenal entrance.
Oh, I saw that. And then they did the turnaround. They did the pose.
Yeah, it was brilliant. And the whole time, Matt on commentary is going, what? Alternate timeline universe are we in here? Can we fix this? Is what is going on? Because
and my thing is this, TNA figured out how to use the Hardys. They figure out where the Hardys level is, how to squeeze them for the nostalgia of their broken gimmick, how to use them for their old WWE Day Hardys, make it work.
And they made the loss work. And the reason it worked is Hendry doesn't get pinned. Okay. You can't have him get pinned when he's going and wrestling on NXT, you know, 2 days later. Jeff just came back. She's not going to have Jeff get pinned. And Santana looks so fucking strong. Again, here's a guy in AEW that should have had more in terms of a presence.
And those two deserve the belt. when they said to Jericho, you didn't do anything for us,
right?
And we stuck our necks out for the Jericho, the Inner Circle.
Oh, that's, yeah.
We stuck our necks out for you in Inner Circle and you gave us nothing in return. And my thing was, the matches they were having against the Lucha Brothers at TNA were legendary. They did not match that in AEW. And I went, you've got the seats, the money, you have everything you need. Put the fucking belts on them. I don't give a damn about SCU. Yeah. I never cared about SCU. I wanted, and I hated the name Proud and Powerful. They were LAX to me. I don't understand why you couldn't buy the rights to LAX for all the money you had.
Oh, there was a bunch of stuff going on with the LAX.
You had Diamante come out there with still wearing LAX ring gear. She wrestled for the company for half a year, and she was coming out in LAX ring gear. Yeah. So, but I do want to get to some what the fuck, some really big ones. There was one match that stuck out to me where I was really disappointed. I don't know if you can hit that what the fuck stuff.
I can definitely hit the what the fuck stuff. And let's hope this should be the what the fuck, right? All right.
We had Fire Dawn, Alba Fire, and Isla Dawn, or Isla Fire, Alba Dawn. Great match. Bianca Belair. Great match. Jade Cargill was Mr. Magoo, did not know where she was. Hmm. When she's supposed to be hitting spots, she was flexing her muscles and cutting poses.
Hmm.
I know. Egg on my face. But my point was, Hunter flashed her around all the name brands and flashed her around fucking your top talent. So I said, okay, if you're telling me, if Hunter thinks that you're going to put her in front of Charlotte Flair, then you're telling me she's ready for the big time, skip the NXT. That was my logic. He was wrong, because there is one point where they've got, I think Alba Fire was on the ropes, and she goes, and Bianca Belair goes, what are you doing? And you can hear the ref go, move! And she's like, huh? And she runs to the other side of the rope and doesn't know what to do. The other three wrestlers are trying to cover for her. It was a disaster. She kept missing spots all over the place. And it was she was disorganized. And you could tell that the others were trying to cover for her. The other one was she tries to break up the tag. I mean, she tries to break up the pin, but she misses the mark. So then they cut the camera to the other direction. And Michael Cole goes, I think Jade Cargill broke the pin. And I went, no, she didn't. She fucking missed. And they fucking jerked her out of the way to make it look like she broke the pin. If they did like baseball, where they have to zoom in and see if the runner made the bag, she did not make the goddamn bag. She was a mile away. And you could see her watching on the edge like this. And she's like, look, the reason why Paul Heyman was there for Brock Lesnar is Paul Heyman is screaming out to Brock the spots. Brock, pin him! Brock, clutch! Brock! And you're going, oh, he's really getting into it. No, he's calling the match. There's nobody there to call the match. If you remember the cage match a while ago where Bayley is calling the match and they're all doing their spots, you literally see Bayley going like this to both her opponents and her team members going, you here, you there, you pin right now, garbage can, you jump. That's the ref's job and that's the veteran's job. Naomi was doing that for Bianca Belair at Royal Rumble when Bianca got concussed going into that ring post first move out. They were literally like, all right, Bianca, get your ass Jade Cargill, get up, do the. And here's my thing, like you said, she's hot, that's all I cared about. They paraded her around WWE. That's all I cared about. And then she had 60 squash matches where she wrestled just fucking the open micer version. I'll use a comedy term, the open micer version. She did local talent. She crushed a lot of people who would never even get an NXT spot now. And I could say that I was wrong. And now it's not even that she doesn't have the ability. She doesn't have the coordination. she looks really uncoordinated. And well,
you gotta remember that the thing is, the reason that the Performance Center works is because they've taken these Division I athletes and trained them on how to be pro wrestlers. The problem with Jade is that she came in with prior experience.
Maybe the wrong type of experience. They have to break bad habits.
That's it. So that's the thing. The thing is that she wasn't polished. She wasn't really trained well. But at the same time, you're covering it up in a sense by putting her in a tag team. You're still able to keep her presence out there. I've said this from the beginning. Jade Cargill is not a wrestling Hall of Famer. She is a movie star. And that's what she's being groomed to be. And I think that that's what we see happen at some point. She goes from wrestling to, you know, movies or television. And I think that's exactly what she needs to be, as compared to Bianca, right? Bianca, D1 athlete who got the training, who got better, and is on a projection to be one of the best female wrestlers, because of the fact that she was just given the time to get it. She also could easily transition into movies and television.
But what I'll say is this, when it regards to where they're at now, if I'm writing this story, eventually, because it's all internet now. Before it was there were sheets and this and that, and it was like the guy who sits there at the stadium with a little pen and pad writing down the scorecard. Right. Now with social media being what it is and everyone can freeze frame stuff, the kinks in the armor are there that it's visible for everybody to see. And all the WWE fanciest camera work in the world can't cover this. I have her lose 2 pay-per-views down the road. I have Jade Cargill become a bitter bitch about it and blame everything on Bianca Belair, and then they feud.
Eventually.
And now
it has to. You have to. And that should realistically be, depending on how well she does in the next few months, the WrestleMania match you're looking at, right? You want to save that, I think, for a higher profile. As long as she's coming along, as long as they have the confidence that Bianca could pull off a match with her, that would be superb.
And safe.
Right. And the best example right now is looking at Rhea and Liv. The last two matches that they've done now, Liv looks like a fucking pro wrestler. She looks so much better.
2 years ago when she had that belt, she did not.
No. She had no reason to have that belt.
When she got it from Ronda Rousey back then, I was like, this is like throwing her a bone.
Right. And it was. It really was throwing her a bone because of the time she put in and et cetera, et cetera. But she was not there. I always thought Carmella was horrible as a champion. The only good thing she had was being a heel and having chicken shit heel tendencies. Liv was at the same level. It just was not good. Now that she found herself and found a character and has the ability, now you can have good matches and go, oh, wow, she can hold her own. Jade will get there. And I think that Bianca has to be that mentor. And as long as she's around Trinity and Bianca, she'll be fine. She's just not going to get it in NXT.
They'll give her a belt eventually. I think she will get a belt. I don't know if it'll be Raw. See, that's the one thing with the women is the Raw and SmackDown scenario really doesn't apply to the women as it did with the men's belt. You get one of those two belts. You get you're a champion. Yeah. You're a champion. Yeah. It's not like they did all the Raw belts just shit grilled and no.
And there's so much talent. I would not. I think right now NXT's North American title is the experiment where I think that we could see foreseeably a U.S. or and or intercontinental type women's titles introduced. Because there's just so much talent. And it's mind blowing. At the pay per view at NXT, you know, after Roxanne retained, then you had Gulia show up, and she is, I mean, the crowd reaction to seeing her come out and just go stand face to face with Roxanne. Holy shit. It's like, here's someone who hasn't even stepped in the ring yet. This is literally her first time setting foot in a ring. And it was like natural made fucking rivalry between these two. So when that, when you look at the ton of talent that they have and the way things just keep filtering, man, again,
it's good.
Yeah. And it wouldn't be surprising to me at some point, hey, use the NXT talent at least, and you can bring some of the, you know, the veteran talent down. Well,
what they're doing is, this is clever. They've got the, I call it NXTNA. New XTNA member. You're a new XTNA member. Thank you, Brother Contreras. Sport Entertainment Gun, I think it says. They got the NXT members trickling out onto TNA members trickling out to NXT, NXT members trickling out onto SmackDown. So right. There right. was a progression there. What annoyed me, another what the fuck moment was, and I don't know if we discussed this last week. If we did, tell me. This week we see Moxley walking around with Marina Shafir. He said, hey, this isn't your show anymore. He did that, and he goes, I want to see Darby Allin. Right. And I went, what? Darby Allin was just put in a coffin. I know it's kayfabe, but just humor me. This kid's in a coma right now, storyline-wise. Why would you completely ignore the winner and go to the loser and invest? I'm now emotionally invested in whatever Moxley has more than I'm invested in anything Jack Perry did. You just completely delegitimized Jack Perry.
Well, so I have big issues with, I guess my what the fuck comes down to the word you just said, Jack Perry. So you want to talk about delegitimizing. So you have Swerve lose to Daniel Bryan. Personally, Daniel Bryan should have won that title from Jericho Moxley, someone who is established, okay? But you had him go over on Swerve. Then you have him come out, cut a promo, mm-hmm. and then if you don't set your timer for an overflow, it cuts off. So you do not see Jack Perry come out and attack him. You don't even see Jack Perry show up on the screen. Okay.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that.
So then you have Jack come out, attack him, and stand over Daniel Bryan. Okay. Jack Perry has basically done nothing really to elevate or deserve this, but he's the one, you know, we're apparently they're going with this. At the same time, you take Swerve, and instead of elevating him by having him win the championship from Daniel Bryan in the biggest moment,
you send him backwards to a story you've done 2 years ago.
Right, which means one thing, and we also saw this with the Grizzled Young Veterans, you know, by the Bucks retaining and then the Grizzled Young Veterans kind of confronting the Bucks. Those guys are fucking out of control. They're power fucking hungry, out of control assholes who are still in Tony's ear. Because Hangman knows that the only good match he's had in his wrestling career was against Swerve. One fucking match. I'm sorry. That's it. And the guy
was that spot with the guy being hung, where he's being hung up by the chain. That was the spot.
Right. And you know, and so it's just this instead of going forward, you bring out Ricochet. Fine, that's great. Ricochet has his moment, beats the other young kid who's Ospreay's whatever the hell he is, buddy.
Cousin, oh, no, I like
whatever.
I like him. He's got all the moves. He's got the look, but they're not. He's a jobber,
right?
He's an extreme jobber,
right? But you have Ricochet win, and then you have Ospreay come out, and then for no reason we have fucking Pac. Why? This guy does not bring anything to you, and he gets
and he just won a belt for some other. They did a hodgepodge. So this is what AEW did that was confusing. There's obviously no more Blackpool Combat Club, or maybe there is. So you make a trios champion where you take half of the Blackpool Combat Club and you add Pac. There's no promo cut about it. There's no backstory done to it. We don't know what happens to the Death Triangle. We don't know what's going on with the Lucha Brothers, which is Death Triangle with him, which I thought that team never made any sense. The most British guy you can...
We kind of know what's going on with the Lucha Brothers.
Hurt?
Yeah. Lucha Brothers are, allegedly, Lucha Brothers are going to be in the WWE within the next bunch of months.
Right.
Their contracts are up. So,
right.
So that's why you're starting to see that fall apart. And then the Moxley thing, now you just mentioned Blackpool. So what's going on with Blackpool now that Moxley apparently
with Marina Shafir, who I never cared about, another one of these people, you know, when you try to recreate what China was for Triple H and you find that one butch broad who could just beat the crap out of everybody and blah blah blah, and she'll you know, sucker punch a guy or nutshot him, and then, you know, but she can't be, and I'm going, all right, look, everyone does it, it's a trope. And if you're going to go with that trope and you're going to make him some sort of new DX, how do you go more to the left or to the right as a heel of what the Blackpool Combat Club was supposed to be?
Right. And what are they essentially doing? And on top of that, why does Moxley need her? That makes no sense. And you brought in Camille for Sasha.
You got to post that. You brought in Grit Camille your teeth. Sasha. You're getting it in deep.
Grit it your teeth, man.
I might grit your teeth. You're going to get it nice and bloody deep. And it's like, all right. Yeah.
But, you know.
They'll forget about you after All In is over. Your British thing. They'll drop those two back to TNA.
Well, you know, It's just interesting again, because what you're seeing essentially, and what I don't like is you're seeing the opposite tribalism now, right? So for months, you know, and Steve will still say, you know, the WWE guys and how tribalistic it is, and they're attacking AEW, and you have people online who are just all crying about, oh, the WWE fans, they just want AEW to fail, et cetera, et cetera. Well, the truth of the matter is the AEW fans wanted the war. They wanted the war, right? This was the whole thing. We want a Monday Night War. We want this again. And if you remember, that's what they were doing. They were attacking the WWE.
The thing with WWE and their fan base is it's not that they hate AEW. They're going, what is it? It's brand loyalty.
It's not even that. It's the fact that the AEW fans now are complaining that it's just trendy. It's just popular to shit all over AEW. They're not looking at the product. And this is what they said about the WWE fans. WWE fans are defending it to death, but they're not looking at how bad the product is. And that's exactly what was going on, right? You look at it and you go, Vince was destroying it, right? Vince literally was killing the creation. So Now, when the shoe's on the other foot, well, those WWE fans are just so biased and stuff, and it's like no one wants to look in the mirror. The honest answer is that there shouldn't be a wrestling war, right? Because there's no combo, there's no there's no reason that these two companies should be fighting.
Wait a minute. Now, our brother Contreras over here, he's saying that Shane McMahon has signed the deal. Now, I don't know what he's referring to. I've been busy this week. Do you know what he's referring to?
Allegedly, Tony Khan went out and got a McMahon.
Which could be why Moxley's going out saying it's not your company anymore.
Something like that, yeah.
Which, again, so you're going to go back to what they did 20 years ago when Ric Flair bought half of the company and then he had his own little faction and he
fought. Oh, shit. When Shane bought WCW, he's just been straight for that. He's now the owner of this.
Yeah,
But listen, the truth of the matter is, and this is what it all comes down to, period. When AEW started, the bullshit line that was fed is that this is going to be a different product. These are the guys we're going to use. These are the people that, you know, you don't necessarily see. We're not going to sign all this WWE talent. And then Tony Khan realized one thing. Oh, the WWE talent is already established. They're already made. These people, no matter if they were a low card person or a top person, they've been on television where millions of people have seen them. So of course you're going to want to bring them in because it brings recognition to your television show, right? Signing someone like a Shane McMahon is exactly what you should be doing for the sake of your television product, because you're going to get eyes on that TV show. That's great. The question is, how do you break a million and build it from there? Because when you had Punk, you were on course of at least maintaining that over a million. And then you went backwards again.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem too is that, again,
They gave Punk way too much authority. We've all said that they gave him way too much. Collision was, but never see, needed.
No, but that wasn't Punk's authority. That was the network.
Yeah,
but
they're utilizing time. I get it. What I did not like about, and to a degree still don't like about WWE, is this idea that SmackDown and Raw are separate entities, but these pay-per-views are all integrated now. They tried to do a few single pay-per-views, and it leaves too much. They got the right balance now. AEW has three different shows, and there's still too many fucking jobbers. Cut these local talent out. I don't give a shit about the local talent. I'm sorry. That's what Dark is for. You want to save that for your website? Don't put them on a fucking primetime show.
But the
stick
problem
to the story.
But the problem is that there isn't as much as you think. That's the thing. Because you're gonna see, like, Missa Kate showed up. I think it was on Rampage to lose a match. Okay, great. But you're seeing it's not that you're seeing local talent. You're just seeing other people from other companies that they bring in, they wrestle a match, and then they're gone.
Right. But that's the problem of, I already know what the result is going to be. WWE would do this to break a new guy in and to show how tough he is. AEW is doing it every week where somebody comes in and like, oh, he's bad. He's beating this guy. I don't want to see that. And there's too many factions that they get a rocket ship strapped to them, but with only a little bit of fuel. The Undisputed Kingdom, they have nothing now. They have no belts. They don't wrestle. Your two guys still, Mike and what's his name? not just Kanellis, but the other guy.
Yeah, if you put a,
can't even think of their name, and they don't wrestle, they don't do anything, they show up afterwards.
Is it Taven?
Mike Taven.
Matt Taven.
Matt Taven. Yeah. Matt Taven does nothing. He can wrestle, doesn't do shit. Does not fucking. Then we had the Vincent, who came from Ring of Honor to TNA to Ring, doesn't do a damn thing. Right. You've got a lot of guys that are not that had rocket ships strapped to them, or they fizzle out by their own accord. A Wardlow comes back, fizzles out, comes back, fizzles out. The Machine, Brian Cage, the biggest jobber of them all, biggest fucking jobber in the universe.
You saw tonight on NXT the problem with this, and that is Ethan Page is unfucking believable. You had a talent who I've talked to Ethan, in the past. He is one of the nicest guys around. He's always been one of those guys who the talent and potential has been there, but no one's really been able, he's just not, no one's tapped into it. And the All Eagle thing has always been something that he's been good at, because I think he draws on his own, experience, and it's something that feeds in. And NXT has just been able to elevate him so quickly to the fact where you could put him in a main event against a TNA wrestler, have it believable that the TNA wrestler could eventually win that title during that match. And Henry is on the same, rocket ship strap trajectory because of the fans and getting behind him, that, when you look at it, it's crazy to think that those two guys, right? If Henry could have been signed by AEW, if Ethan Page could have stayed there, why couldn't those type of guys be built? And now this is a great point here.
Ricky Stark.
Ricky Stark is stepping out.
NXT country all day.
If he goes to NXT, Ricky Stark is going to be another guy who just kind of lights it up. The danger too is, for instance, if you don't build these guys and retain them. Now, Swerve signing a contract was huge.
I think, was it $4.5 million over 3 years?
Something. It was a big deal. And Ricky is WWE bound. It will be a giant star, which is definitely true. But think about this. Right now, you see MJF, and we know MJF's locked up. Who do they have right now going against MJF, who they're starting to build? Daniel Garcia. Daniel Garcia, to me, is like watching paint dry. Okay? But you put him in a ring with MJF, and you see that there's something there. There's some kind of potential there. But there's no one there to take that and elevate that and find that and make it something. Daniel Garcia, if he get to the point where his contract's up and he leaves, he goes to NXT, he becomes a star. Mm-hmm. Wardlow becomes a fucking star.
What about, now wait a minute, here's my question now, and I haven't watched enough of this product. How is Lexi's King doing over there?
He's doing fine. He's doing fine for what he is, and that is someone who is kind of, in and out. He's not a major push star, which is fine. He doesn't need to be, because he's a guy who shows up and agitates. And they're using that perfectly, right? They're just using him to show up. They had him in a backstage segment, I think this past week, where basically, he said something to agitate. And, I forgot who he was in the segment with they snap back at him, you know, essentially about his dad, you know, and him not having a father figure or something like that. And it was a great back and forth. It was great banter.
That's the only thing I'll say. WWE, you have two wrestlers in him, and you also have basically a Scott Steiner kid, and you're not in Bron Breakker. Just use the fucking name. I get it. You want to separate yourself out from it, and you have legitimate reasons. Lexi King's got legit reasons, but you're going to also go back to that storyline. You're going, oh, he just had a Frankensteiner. Oh, your dad was Brian Pillman. You're using the gimmick anyway. Go all in on your gimmick. That is your family name. That's what I mean. They did that with that Axel guy, who was wasn't
Mr. Perfect's son. But again, here's the thing. The thing is that that's something in particular to you, but at the same time. Bron Breakker, they did a package that aired during the commercials. If you have the you know, they have Peacock without commercials, right? And it was so fucking good because it hit on his NXT, it hit on him now, it hit on him becoming the Intercontinental Champion, and all of a sudden you see it doesn't matter if you called him. You know, lickety split. The dude would be a fucking star.
And you drag it off at lickety split. Oh yeah. My God, he just gave him the split and the cherry on top.
No, he just gave him the Frankensteiner, you know, like his uncle.
Yeah, right.
But that's the whole point. The whole point is that a guy like that transcends whatever fucking name you put on. Lexi King has found a character, and I think, you know, Chris here said Pillman Jr. is green, but shows a lot of potential, and they never tapped into that in AEW.
They gave him the Varsity Blondes gimmick.
Yeah,
and it didn't work.
No, of course not. And again, a lot of this too, what we're starting to see too is we're starting to see. NXT also like the North American Women's Champion, whatever her name is. It's hard to keep all these names straight now too. Mm-hmm. But she had a wonderful match because Wendy Chu picked an opponent for her, you know, before they had their match going in on NXT on Tuesday. And it was Rosemary. So you took a TNA veteran and you had her work one of your young talents who's a champion. And she looked like a million fucking dollars because Rosemary made her fucking look great.
Ilani Jordan.
Yeah, that's it. So, you know, and Kalani had a great match against Wendy Chu as well on the pay-per-view. So that's
Rosemary by far is great, and you know, bringing, you know, it was funny. My father on one day he had the TV on one day, and I hear wrestling, and he had on WOW, Women of Wrestling, and I'm watching the level of what the hell's going on in here, and it looks like somebody hit a slow motion button to a wrestling match, and. You got to, people don't realize like TNA, they're wrestling at a much higher caliber, sometimes even better than AEW. And you've got people who are leaving WWE or AEW to go to TNA and work out some kinks. It's the minor league, sure, but they're wrestling at a really high level there.
Yeah.
So when they come from TNA to NXT, some of these people are going to be like, oh my God, who are these people? But they're not sloppy in the ring. They're fairly polished.
Well, but you're also seeing, you got to remember one thing too. And this is the thing that's the funniest part about this. The NXT crowd, the NXT base, the people who watch this, these are the same type of people who are AEW fans, right? So they know about TNA. So when Rosemary shows up, they got it right away.
Mm-hmm.
They know who it was. You know, when Wentz and
NXT is the gateway drug for WWE fans.
It is. It is. Because it feeds you to all different levels. But what we're going to be seeing now is going into that CW contract now with the Full Sail going away, essentially, with the, you know, the shows being done in Orlando going away. Now you're going to see something that looks a little different, like this. You know, again, they've been doing these pay-per-views now, or PLEs, in bigger arenas.
Premium live event. I want a live event that's not premium. I want to see what they consider a not premium.
It's called a house show.
Yeah, yeah.
That's it. I mean, seriously, yeah. That's what it is. It's a house show or a premium live event or a Raw, SmackDown, or a NXT taping. So, but it's going to be interesting because you're already seeing what they're doing. By having network money, your first two shows are going to have Punk in Chicago and Orton in St. Louis, and they're going to be, you know, probably showing up as suggestive general managers to Ava or something like that. But something to get the crowds pumped and into it. And hey, look, this is, you know, the big boys are part of this as well.
Oh, so, you know, now with that in mind, where is Cena on this final lap of his, you know, career? I haven't seen much Cena.
I think he starts at the beginning of the year.
Okay.
I think it's officially, so next year, 2025 will be the retirement year.
Well, we got a few minutes. Finished. Do he's you probably, have a what to look out for a sound bite?
Probably.
Let's see if we do that. All right. We just mentioned John Cena. Obviously, we're going to see the wrap of his career. Brock Lesnar should be returning not too far off. There's been rumor mill that he's going to show up. Bobby Lashley and AEW. I don't know what you can do with him at AEW.
I don't think Tony's going to know what to do with him at AEW either.
No, he's going to get lost in the shuffle fast. That guy needs a mouthpiece. He is a mush mouth. And that's a problem for him. The other thing, we still have to have a future now where Nia Jax now is going to deal with the fact that Tiffy Time wants to cash in on her, which was a really great. We knew it was going to happen, and we knew she was going to go with the old, oh, I was trying to help you out by bashing your opponent in the head with my briefcase that I can use to cash in on you. The other thing, A-Town Down Under, that's going to implode any second now. We got to see those two guys go at it. Tonga, I keep hearing about it, and I keep hearing about these Tongan women who are going to show up. Please, somebody tie Naomi and also Nia Jax into this somehow, or at least reference it. Toss me a bone. Reference that these women are in this bloodline since The Rock put them on that stupid tree. Again, my only problem with WWE is if you're going to make reference to something, like with, you know, Triple H dragging Nia Jax around the upper, you know, the seniors when she should have been with the freshmen. Fine, you're indicating to me that this is a possibility. Now, behind the scenes, they could be doing something in developmental where they say, hey, Nia, see if you can throw this guy around. No, she can't lift the guy safely. Fuck it. We ain't going to do it. Could be. But if you've got two women on one side and two women on the other side, all right, I want to see the Bloodline Auxiliary Women's Corps do something.
Yeah, but again, here's the thing.
And there's nothing, they're not doing anything with Naomi. Naomi right now is putting people over.
Right. As she should be. And she would be in the bloodline too. She'd be taking pins. Again, this is like the bloodline is unique in one sense. It is one of the few things in wrestling history that is A, literal. Okay. Bigsby has taken years to develop.
Mm-hmm.
And
went from just Paul Heyman looking at Roman Reigns when Roman Reigns looks over his shoulder and you see Paul Heyman going.
Yeah. And you know, and just it's going to take its steps to wherever it's going. Again, when Hunter says, you know, they're only in the, you know, top of the third inning, that type of thing is true, because you have endless possibilities and talent. And you have to see where these stories are going.
Well, that's what I was referencing just to our friend of your brother. Hikuleo is not going to be called Hikuleo. He's going to be called there's Tama Tonga Tala Tonga Loa and Tala Tonga. He's going to be Tala Tonga.
Right, because he's taller than everyone else.
Something silly. But there's also, I keep seeing in all the wrestling sheets that there are these two Tongan sisters that are going to be introduced. So I guess you got to stretch this out and do it in time for Survivor Series, which is what, November?
Listen, I don't even know if it's going to be Survivor Series, to be honest.
It seems like that would be way too soon to introduce that much storyline in such a small.
I think it's still, there's going to be a build. And I think, you know, quite honestly, you can play this out. And at some point, you could even do a War Games with it. Mm-hmm. You know, because you can just bump that up to a, you know, to the main roster. The biggest thing too is speculation, like you said, Brock's coming back. Well, what if the Wise Men put together a team of Roman, Brock, CM Punk?
Oh my God.
Heyman's guys.
Oh my God!
That he was the Wise Man. Yeah. So I mean, to take on Solo and those guys, and it doesn't even have to be like
it wouldn't be the bloodline; it would be a bloodbath.
Well, you know. So.
Oh my God! It's itself the conflict of all of their egos, and Paul to manage each of these guys, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you could. So again, there's so much that you can go.
There's meat on the bone.
Yeah, and you have all these other things, all these other floating parts. So you know that again, where it goes, we'll see. But it's going to. It's funny because everyone wants excelled, right? I want to see what happens. I want to see what happens. Well, the truth of the matter is that if you look at traditional layouts, Lucas set it up, right? First Star Wars. Fucker says he's got 9 films. Bullshit. You didn't know that thing would be successful. Now you're fucking claiming you have 9
films. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, after the fact, you're like, oh, yeah, by the way.
So you set out, you get a contract that gives you 2 more for sure. So it takes you essentially 9 years to tell 3 stories.
Mm-hmm.
The fact of the matter is that essentially with what you're looking at on this, again, we've just gone through the first 3 years of a story or so, you know? So you definitely mean no freaking way. I'm really not sure if Roman Reigns will accept, but what would happen for Brock Lesnar until he will F5, no freaking way. Yeah, I mean, again, it's just interesting to see what you can do with all this. So
there are 2 things I would like to see, but they're not practical for the bloodline and for Judgment Day. They're not practical, and it wouldn't make a whole lot of sense, but it would be satisfying in a small sense. I would love to see Damian Priest and Rhea Ripley beat the shit out of the rest of the Judgment Day into submission until they go, yeah, you are our leaders. But that wouldn't necessarily make sense, and it tethers them back to that plantation of those people again.
Right, right.
So I get that. Same thing, though, with the bloodline, though, I think it could work where you go to Roman Reigns, because they already floated that out there, where he beats the living crap out of Solo Sikoa until everybody else falls in line, and now you have a mega faction of all these people to something to the NWO level, potentially.
Right, and we know how the NWO sunk.
It did.
right? So the one problem.
Well, yeah, the blood black and the this and the that
and the blood. So the one problem you do have is that you don't want to oversaturate. Everyone, think about how many people for the last year and a half, 2 years, this bloodline stuff.
Bend it. But how bad is it now that I want the opposite? That's good. That's the power of doing something now where now it's like I want the opposite.
So now the danger that you have, right, is exactly what the NWO did, and that was, now we're gonna oversaturate because it's so popular.
Let's keep going. No, stop, slow down.
Roman Reigns versus Solo at Bad Blood will be happening. I don't know if they pull the trigger that quickly. I don't know if Roman comes back.
He has to. Here's the thing. Yeah. The dark horse we're not talking about is Jimmy Uso.
Sure.
Jimmy Uso has to be a part of whatever. Roman Reigns can't come out alone. We know that. So if Roman Reigns comes out and you do a Paul Heyman all-star band, or Roman Reigns goes, Jay, I fucked up. Jimmy, I fucked up. I need you. We'll even go with Sammy. Sami Zayn, you're the honorary Uso again. The four of us go out there and beat the piss out of them. Come on, let's do it for old time's sake. And if I got to fight you, if I got to take a punch to the face, can't make up for what I did. But let's go back to 2 years ago when we were unstoppable and the four of us just get all of our ducks in a row and dominate and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, I mean, and the thing is that it could very well go that way. But again, when you're talking long storytelling, the truth of the matter is first Jimmy has to be over his
physically injury, right? And he looks terrible at SummerSlam.
Yeah,
he looks sickly.
Hopefully, and Jay, you have a story right there. Why should Jay fucking put any type of consideration into Roman?
He's over on his own. He doesn't need that guy.
Right, exactly. So there are parallels in this whole thing. The other parallel is The Rock.
Mm-hmm.
Rock, at some point, if you truly are going to elevate the story and essentially end the story, The Rock has to have something to do with it. And the logic would be putting The Rock and Roman and the Usos together, because that's the old blood versus the new blood, right?
One other way with it. You could do Sami Zayn, because that was the team at their height. And you have this battle go back and forth at a War Games type scenario, and then at the end you hit The Rock's music, and The Rock just goes, the hell with this shit. I control everything. I'm the guy. I'm signing your checks. I am the...
You're fired. You're fired.
The Rock says, you shut your damn mouth, you Rudy Poo, son of a bitch. I wrote all your goddamn checks. You fucking asshole. And he curses now. You could go that route where The Rock looks around and says, I don't need a Paul Heyman. I'm already the guy. You're asking me for... all those times, Paul, that you're asking for matches and asking for favors, it all goes up to me now anyway. So it's redundant. You're not needed. Sami Zayn, you're not blood. You're not bloodline. Get the hell out of here. You two are you three are Tongans. I decide. And he beats, and they do a triple threat. Solo, Rock, Roman. Rock beats them both. I run the whole damn family. Whatever remaining, Rikishi comes out there and puts the Fuku Leia, whatever the fuck, chili peppers on his neck.
And then we see in Return of the Jedi fashion, the ghosts of Afa, Sika, and Rocky Johnson and Chief
Maivia. All floating over there. They put holographs over him.
Yeah.
Like what they did with the Tupac, where like they had Tupac at Coachella and they had holographic Tupac. They have Afa, Sika, and Rocky Johnson. And maybe Snuka. You do with Snuka.
And Chief Maivia and the credits roll, and that's the end of WWE forever. All right, here we go.
Rosie.
Rosie.
Don't forget
and
Rosie. Umaga. Yeah, and Umaga. Yeah. Well, no, so here's the thing. I was going into Basham Berlin with the lowest of expectations. Going, yeah. What the fuck? This is the matches are going to be trite. They're going to be contrived. The endings are going to be telegraphed. And usually it's the everything that leads up to that pin that will make or break a match. And I found myself this screen right here playing a video game. That screen to my left, I have another computer screen watching the thing. And I stopped the game because I said, this is way, whatever's happening over here is way more important than me leveling up over here. That was the power of good storytelling, good wrestling, except for the one match. Not you, Jade. Not.
Oh, man.
What are you doing? Get the fuck out of the frame! Go! I was like,
God damn it. I agree.
It was the best. It was better than All In. And yeah. All In had important matches that did move certain stories along, but it also hacked people off at the knees and left us with nowhere to go.
Well, I think the big point too is that 50,000 in Wembley did not come close to 13,000 in the Uber Arena. And that electricity of that crowd was unbelievable. Which also, again, you know, when crowds react like that, we saw it in Puerto Rico. You're going to get that that desire to want to go back to these cities, and I think the fans realize that.
Hold on, he's talking about Saudi Arabia. I did not like Saudi Arabia because that crowd is not as electrified. They injected a lot of money into WWE. That's why the Jewel thing happened. But I'll say this. It was needed because you would not have Bash in Berlin if there wasn't Saudi Arabia, in my estimate. And they did change belt. I mean, Seth Rollins won his belt, or it was a new belt at Saudi Arabia. Things have happened there. You had the American belt, the U.S. belt change in Saudi Arabia. Rey Mysterio lost it over there. So stuff has happened there. Belts have changed. But that Berlin crowd was so electric. Randy Orton had to stop because you could see the look on his face. He had never seen reaction like that in a long time. Something happened in Berlin that was really good. And in England, the only real pop was from Nigel McGuinness. That surprise pop when Nigel McGuinness came out at that Battle Royale, there were not pops for great spots and great wrestling. But you know what it is? The difference was at All In, we saw storylines end. At Bash in Berlin, we saw storylines progress with me wanting more. Whereas, all right, Mariah May won it All In. And Toni Storm left crying. And I went, all right. And she pranced off dancing. And she never shows up again in a year. And 6 months down the road, she shows up to her regular music in a leather outfit. Would I be surprised? No. We saw people come back, but I just didn't care. You know? We went from an American belt on MJF back to the international belt. Okay. Nothing. And by the way, if it's an international belt and a continental belt, anyways, which, Okada has, and you got this belt, you don't defend it. I didn't care. Anything that happened at All In did not leave me with that buzz feeling. I didn't get the tingle on my skin like, you remember when you saw The Matrix for the first time? Nobody told you what it was entirely. You had an idea that there was some kung fu shit, and you left. You were like, or WrestleMania 17, or that feeling like, what did I just witness? It wasn't quite that extreme at Bash in Berlin, but I got none of that in All In. No surprise. Ricochet, we knew Ricochet was coming, and he didn't even win.
Right.
You've already put him in the mid-card and shuffled him into the spin cycle. You've already washed him out.
You put him as the main event of your flagship show, and then Pac comes out and steals the thing again.
You've already washed him out.
Yeah.
You washed him out. You gave him the Matt Sydal treatment. and he didn't fuck up.
Right.
Matt Seidel was supposed to be the guy 3 years ago. He takes a slip on a slippery top the top of the turnbuckle. His career never comes back, no matter what he does. He doesn't cut any promos. No idea what his persona is. We only remember it from TNA that he has a third eye and blah, blah, blah. And he tries to tap his forehead. You don't know why, because he's no contact. Never comes back. Ricochet's lost in the shuffle. He is Ricochet without any persona.
We'll see where it leads to, and hopefully, the more that there's better storytelling all around on all shows, it enhances the wrestling itself.
High tide raises all ships.
Yeah. So. All right, so that's gonna be it for this week. Rob, you got any shows coming up?
I do. I am going to be performing tomorrow by University and Tropicana, which is right by the more larger intersection of Flamingo and Tropicana. Oh no, excuse me. University and Decatur. It's at Han Izakaya Japanese Restaurant, University and Decatur.
Oh,
which is by Decatur and Flamingo.
Yeah, over in Chinatown.
A few blocks away. Blocks away from Chinatown, sure. But really close. And it's a place called Han Izakaya. It's near the Orleans. It's closer to the Orleans. It's two blocks away. So if you're at the Orleans, take Cameron, go down the hill where the school buses are, make the left, make the right. You're at the restaurant. It used to be the Jackpot. Trump will be making an appearance. If you're on my socials at Boss Comedy, you will see it on my feed. But it is I am not listed on that one. I am the surprise special guest. I'm breaking the fourth wall. But you're asking me where I'm going to be. Fuck it. Yeah. So you'll see Obama or you'll see Trump. And if I can ever get my perm going, maybe you'll see Cat Williams.
Oh Jesus!
I got to get the perm and do Cat Williams. Only way I can do blackface for Obama. Is I've already got the Trump tan on and I take off my wig and now it's a little less. I could tell you I'm half black, but nobody gives two shits about that. I look like I'm the blackest cancer patient ever. That's about it. I mean, so that
that's
doesn't
my, it's my favorite Marvel movie, by the way, Black Cancer.
Black Cancer. Yes. Hold on. Wakanda for two more days. but yeah, that's all be. And then September 30th, I will be headlining at Backstop. In fact, let me just make sure I've got that date correct. But I will be, yeah, that's Monday. Backstop Comedy in Boulder City. Both shows will be at around that 9:30 mark. Usually the Backstop run one's a little bit late. But check out Boss Comedy for more. And on the 16th, which is 2 weeks away, I will be looking to do a production, a location to be announced, where you will see the first local debate between Donald Trump and Kamala Harris. Kamala.
Kamala?
Yeah, I know, Kamala Harris. Excuse me. Excuse me, you know what? You remember when she was Indian? Remember 4 years ago she was Indian? It was Kamala. Now she's black. It's Kamala.
Kamala. The Ugandan.
Kamala Harris. I've been saying that and my brother corrected me. My brother's like, hey, baby, bro. It's Sister Kamala. And he didn't say it's Sister Kamala. That's right. But I've been saying Kamala nonstop. And
so,
now I'm getting.
So is that the white half of your brain working?
Yes. Well, that Kamala, she just ain't no good. Trying to ruin our country. She destroyed America. But we're not going to let her. I'll tell you what, we are not going to let her destroy our country. That Kamala Harris ain't no good. And then trying to give them Mexicans.
The little slap, and then all of a sudden the other side kicks in. God, it's got to be a fucking nightmare.
We've got a lot of people calling her Kamala. But Sister Kamala. It's going to do some great things, and she just can't pay attention to none of that.
Camel toe?
You know, some of the people have called her that. They've called her Campbell Toe Harris. And you know what? There's rumors that she also might be a man. I've heard things. People have said that she might be a post-op. So sad.
Well, speaking of post-ops, if you need any needs to get yourself nutritious and healthy and in the gym and working out, just go to Rep Sports.
Ooh, lots of testosterone in her. It just goes barring out.
And just use the code Vegas to get 10% off. And as Steve would say, thank you, military, all servicemen and women across the nation. We appreciate you, and thank you. Happy Labor Day to all you laborers out there. Enjoy your Monday off. I'm hoping that next
yo, week... Yo hablo español también, okay? Hablo de español. We know lots of languages, so many languages. It's true.
I'm hoping that this week we'll be able to get a sit down with the former president talking about the state of wrestling to air next week Sunday. So
yes, we will have Donald Trump, and he will talk about how he became the greatest WWE Hall of Famer of all time and his many, many title runs. Because you know, I've had so many title runs. You know, it's more title runs than Ric Flair. They don't want to say that. They don't want to admit that, because you've got to count the Crockett Promotions for Ric Flair. Okay, I just had more title runs as a WWE Hall of Famer. They had to include his WCW and his Jimmy and his Crockett runs. And when you really look at it fairly, he doesn't have as many. So sad.
So there you go. We will probably be hearing the president next week. And again, it'll probably be a recorded episode, so tune in then. Check out,
out Jim Crockett Promotions to watch that loser. He had to wrestle his last match. His daughter wasn't even there. Charlotte wasn't even there. They said Andrade El Idolo. They had to send like a B-team guy from NXT or TNA or AEW, or, you know, now he's wrestling some guy called Carmelo. He's not even wrestling a good guy.
Is it Carmelo?
It's Carmel. It's Carmel Hayes. It's Carmel Nugent Hayes.
Carmel Toe. So tune in for that. And big announcement this week too is that the Vince McMahon documentary is coming out on Netflix in September. So keep your eyes
peeled. 6-part series.
That. Yeah, we'll see which part is the most horrifying out of all of these.
How many bodies are buried? We know I know the first of the horrible was with Jimmy Snuka and his girlfriend. Vince McMahon made that one go away.
Yeah, there's probably a lot of stuff that we're going to learn that is going to make things.
Hey, kids, look up Soma, SOMA. Look that one up. It's a tranquilizer. It's a muscle tranquilizer. You get to be awake for the whole thing. You just ain't going to move. Look up Soma.
Just like DJ on his cruise.